The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, November 2019, Volume 20, Number 10. And this is the fifth and final installment of the November issue. On this month's cover, Oprah wears a black form-fitting button-front low V-neck sweater dress. Her hair is long and smooth, and she wears polished natural golden and black stone teardrop-shaped earrings. This month's headlines are A Cure for Loneliness, My All-Time Favorite Turkey Recipes, and I'm Sharing One of the Most Joyful Experiences of My Life. And let's start out with from Love That. The first page is, we're seeing a woman in a dark copper satin blouse with the cuffs rolled up, and she's wearing some very faded jeans with that. And what we can really see most of are her forearms and hands, which are laden with gorgeous gold bracelets, everything from cuffs to chunky chains. And the first eye-catching one is about a 2-inch wide cuff that is a little bit rounded, and it looks like it's hammered. And it is in a bright, shiny gold. And we've got some other bangles below that. And then we've got a chain, huge links. The links are probably 3/4 of an inch, and they're fat links. And that's a satin gold finish. And underneath that is a flat, about a 3/4 inch wide, flat, shiny bracelet with big pave diamonds in it. And on the other hand, we have some smaller chains and some other gold bangles. And then we have lots of rings. There are just so many of them. But let's just have a look at the heading from Oprah and the commentary. Gilded gathering. The more the merrier at this arm party. The secret is letting multiple bracelet styles, bangles, cuffs, and chain links of all shapes and sizes commingle in one or more spectacular stack. Feel free to combine lavish real deal pieces with luxe for less designs too. What matters is the collective glow. Throw a couple of rings on each hand to pull the look together, and you'll be dazzling day or night. And here's a list of the bracelets. For $3,200, we have one from RobertoCoin.com. And then for $45, we have a bracelet from KennethJLane.com. Then from Hearts on Fire, $6,750. JaniceSavitt.com for $250. And then we have something from RJGraziano.com for $3,200, another Roberto Coin bracelet for $5,250, and then there's another one from RobertoCoin.com for $7,900. So you see they've really mixed these $55 bracelets in with almost $8,000 bracelets. And the rings, which come in all shapes and sizes in shiny gold, are from Ippolita.com for $3,000, SvelteMetals.com for $145, Jennifer Fisher, $195, and BonheurJewelry.com for $179. Still in Love That, we have a page of fashion to get us ready for Christmas and the holiday season and all the parties. Fabulously festive. And we have a page here of sparkles, sequins, and other sparkles. And kind of a fake fur fringe look and iridescence and pretend diamonds. So let's look at this. To achieve party perfection with a modern twist, pick one piece that really shines and keep the rest of your outfit a bit more understated. But the fun's not over yet. You're never fully dressed without a few standout accessories and a lovely lip in red or rose. And first off, we have a model wearing a sparkly, it's kind of silver and pewter, kind of a two-tone jacket with a narrow shawl collar, which is that kind of rounded, not the notched, traditional notched collar. So the collar is in black satin, and there's a little bit of black satin detail at the hems of the sleeves. And this is worn over a black V-neck top and some black trousers that have a silver stripe, kind of a tuxedo stripe on the side. The blazer is from Alice and Olivia, and it's $795, and you can find it at neimanmarcus.com. The V-neck shirt is from luxshare.com, and it's $98. The jeans are Legions at $255. And there's a skinny silver bracelet, which is from Kate Spade, New York, for $68. Now, here's a slip dress, and this is in kind of a grayish, a white that kind of tends towards the gray, and it looks just like a silk slip with a little V-neck and spaghetti straps. It's $181 at silklaundry.com.au. And we're going to look at some more of the black and gray and silver items. This page is kind of in half. The column on the left is the silvers, the whites, the grays, the blacks, and then the column on the right has the bright pinks and magentas. So below that silk dress, we have a clutch bag, which is in kind of a furry fringe, and it is $225 from Brahmin.com. Below that, we have some pants. These are close-fitting, kind of like a pair of jeans, and they are from Talbots.com, and they're in a black and white and gray, almost like a damask print. And like I said, they're $125. Beside them, we see a moto jacket, a motorcycle jacket in silver and gold sequins. So, you know, that's the asymmetrical chunky zipper and short, just hitting around the waist. This is from Donna Salyer's Fabulous Furs. And go to fabulousfurs.com to find it, and it's $249. What to wear with these items? A satiny red lip. So now, looking below these black and gray and white trousers, pants, we have a little kitten heel. It's a charming little shoe. The kitten heel is very wide at the top, of course, very skinny at the bottom, and the shoe is black. It looks like black velvet. The kitten heel is a sparkly silver, as is the tip of the toe of the shoe, and there's a little bit of ruching across the toes in the black velvet. These shoes are from Charles and Keith, and they're $76. And the watch to wear with this is a nice flat silver face with a very plain modern looking bezel on it, little pave diamonds for the hours, and silver hands, and the stretchy silver band creates kind of diamond shapes. It is from Movado, and it's $1,695. Now let's look at the colorful side of the page. And right off the bat, we have a kind of bright magenta t-shirt shape, little crew neck, kind of loose fitting, short sleeves, cropped kind of at the waist. This sequined tee is from Feig, and it is $495. Then there's a cute little puff of a pocketbook, which is more in kind of a rose pink color. Again, it's that, is it fringe or is it fur? And the bag is $350 from LaFleurandAll.com. A few more pink items here from Polo Ralph Lauren for $298 is a velvet. And this is a velvet skirt, and it comes, well, to the ankle. And it's bias cut, so it's very slender, which means that at the very hem, it kind of falls in a some folds that give you a nice little kick or flare out at the bottom. And it looks like that it might be what's called pan velvet, P-A-N-N-E velvet, which is a very low nap, silky, stretchy velvet. And now we have some stud earrings in what looks like pink diamonds, and they are heart-shaped on gold. They are $1,000 from lightboxjewelry.com. And now below this, for $355, we have a sandal from SJP by sarahjessicaparker.com. It has a gold sole and insole, so you see the gold at the tip of the toe and a gold stiletto heel. And then it has this iridescent, translucent band that's about maybe an inch and a half wide that goes across the toes and then across the top of the arch of the foot. So it's a slip-on. And then we have some jeans from Levi's. Go to levi.com to find them. They are a straight leg jean in that they do not taper below the knee. And these are shown washed from the knee up, so they're very pre-worn looking. So those are from Levi's.com. And then we have a one-shoulder deep magenta sequined top, and it's got a full bishop sleeve on the shoulder that has a sleeve. And the model who's wearing this is got a very nice slender shoulder to show us on the other side. The top is from Zara.com, and it's $70. And it's being worn with a pair of jeans from AmericanEagle.com for $68. Now let's move to the refresh section of the magazine. This article is entitled, Sweat the Small Stuff. Oprah talks with author and climate activist Susie Amie Cameron about how even tiny changes in your diet can have a huge impact. Since reading the OMD plan earlier this year, I've taken up Susie Amie Cameron on her book's challenge to eat one plant-based meal each and every day. It's a genius idea, easy enough for even confirmed carnivores, and especially important now as we learn more about the profound negative effects of animal agriculture on our planet, not to mention the health advantages of cutting back on our consumption of meat and dairy. I was introduced to Susie by our mutual friend Melody Hobson, and then again when I visited the LA set of Avatar 2, which Susie's husband James Cameron is directing. The couple first met on the set of Titanic, which Susie had a role in. When they married 19 years ago, Susie opted to quit acting and focus on being a wife and mother. Susie and I have a lot in common, not least that we began our lives on farms, hers on a gentleman's farm near Doherty, Oklahoma, where her family had a weekend place, mine on my grandmother's sliver of land in Kosciusko, Mississippi. Susie recalls savoring the crunch and color of the produce she picked straight from the fields. My time in the rural South was brief. At 6, I went north to rejoin my mother, who'd moved to Milwaukee. But like Susie, I never lost my love of country air and fresh food. A leading environmental advocate and co-founder with her sister of the Muse Private School in Calabasas, California, Susie recently visited me in Maui, where we talked about our passion for gardening, eating sustainably, and our concern for the Earth's future, all of which she addresses in the OMD plan, which is coming out in paperback soon. I wanted to know what started this woman, someone I consider emblematic of how one person can make a difference on her path. And we have an interview here with Oprah and Susie. Oprah, what was the genesis of One Meal a Day Plan? It's working for me. Susie, from the time I was a girl, I've loved vegetables and connected them to good health. When I had my first child, Jasper, 29 years ago, I made an effort to prepare him foods that were mostly organic, whether meat, chicken, eggs, fruits, or vegetables. Oprah. And then when you met Jim and had three more kids, Susie, sustainability and doing what we can to protect the planet are guiding principles for us. We've instilled those fundamentals in our children. We wanted them to understand their role as the Earth's stewards from an early age. Oprah, so you did the obvious thing. You started a school. I know from experience how hard that is. Susie, yes, my sister Rebecca and I started Muse in 2005. Oprah, you refer to it as an environmental school. Susie, when you start raising a child's consciousness about sustainability from the beginning, it becomes part of their fabric. Oprah, they were learning to grow and prepare their own organically raised food, among other things. And that was all fine until you saw the documentary Forks Over Knives in 2012. Then what happened? Susie, I thought we were doing all the right things food-wise, eating grass-fed beef, free-range chicken, omega-3 packed eggs, a ton of organic vegetables, milk, cheese, and yogurt. We thought we needed the protein and calcium in meat and dairy. That's what we'd been sold. Oprah, but that was wrong? Susie, completely. The movie traces the experiences of a group of people who used plant-based eating to reverse degenerative disease and expose the myths that we need meat to build muscle and cow's milk for strong bones and teeth. Honestly, I was shaken to my core. I had Jim watch it too. Within 24 hours, we cleared out all the food in our home that wasn't plant-based. Oprah, that's how you Camerons roll. And you did the same thing at your schools? Susie, yes, we were all in. Oprah, your motivation for that shift wasn't just health, though, right? Susie, animal agriculture is the number two contributor to climate change, slightly more than all transportation pollution combined. What you put on your plate matters enormously, not just to your health, but to the state of the environment. Oprah, your book, though, is not suggesting everyone go vegan or even vegetarian. Susie, Jim and I eat only plant-based foods, and once we started, we were always on our soapbox. People ran in the other direction when they saw us coming. I realized we needed a more accessible approach, a plan. Oprah, and the plan? Susie, if you eat a single plant-based meal each day as one of your three meals, you will be saving tens of thousands of gallons of water every year and drastically reducing your carbon output, not to mention the health benefits. Oprah, for many, the idea of changing your entire lifestyle by going vegetarian or vegan is overwhelming, so they just shut down. You make it doable. How are the students at your schools? You now have two, right? How are they responding? Susie, yes, our schools are now entirely plant-based, and kids are having contests to compare who's saving the most water or how much they're reducing their carbon footprint. Their enthusiasm is contagious. Parents call us to ask for recipes or tips or how to compost. Oprah, you and Jim are what I think of as light carriers. You've been environmental activists for two decades, but the news about climate is bleak. Are you hopeful we can still improve things? Susie, we have only about 10 more years to avert disaster. My husband and I believe that the more people we can inspire to eat a plant-based diet, the more we can move the needle on the climate crisis, though we all have to do other things as well. Oprah, in past conversations with you, the word reverence has come up again and again. Tell me what that means to you and how it relates to what you're doing with OMD. Susie, I grew up in a very religious household, but inside a church, I never really felt the sense that there was something bigger than us. The only time I felt that way was when I was outdoors. Oprah, where you felt really alive. Susie, yes, but my true awakening came when I read Michael Singer's The Untethered Soul, which I know you love too, and started thinking about the connection between my inner life and the outer world. Then you encouraged me to read Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth, which is a whole other level. Oprah, I agree, and I want everyone to read your book. We've posted some of the great recipes you've created on oprahmag.com, where readers can also track my progress on the OMD plan. Thank you, Susie, for joining me in my garden. Susie, it's so beautiful, Oprah. Thank you. And here's a recipe for roasted cream in quotes, of tomato soup. This makes 6 servings with a total time of 1 hour and 30 minutes. And here are the ingredients. 3 pounds of Roma or plum tomatoes quartered, 1 yellow onion chopped, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 4 cups of almond milk, juice of half a lemon, 2 tablespoons of tomato paste, optional, 2 teaspoons of salt, 1.5 teaspoons of sugar, ground black pepper, and fresh rosemary for garnish, which is optional. Here are the instructions. Preheat oven to 400 degrees. Line a rimmed baking sheet with parchment paper. On the sheet, arrange tomatoes cut side up and onion. Drizzle with oil and toss gently with hands to coat. Roast until tomatoes are tender, about 30 minutes, and let cool for 20 minutes. Carefully transfer vegetables and any juices to a blender and puree until smooth. Transfer to a large pot and cook over medium-high heat. Stir in almond milk, lemon juice, tomato paste if using, salt and sugar. Season to taste with pepper. Bring soup to a boil, then reduce heat to low and simmer for 15 minutes to allow flavors to combine. Ladle into 6 bowls and serve. Garnish with rosemary leaves if desired. And that just about finishes up the content for the November issue of Oprah Magazine. So we're going to hear what I know for sure, and then we're going to fill in the rest of this hour with articles from previous issues of Oprah. And so now we have a picture of Oprah sitting in a very cushioned piece of patio furniture with a blanket over her, and she's reading, and she's got a table, and she's got a canvas tote beside her with OW monogrammed on it. Oprah says, "My best life, a beautiful day in a magnificent book in one of my favorite places." I believe she's in her garden in Hawaii. Oprah says, "I recently spent a day sitting and reading beneath my oaks, the ones I call the apostles. 12 of them form a grove, and their branches intertwine to create a canopy. When it finally got too dark to read and I picked up my book bag to go inside, I took a deep breath, brought myself back to my surroundings, and marveled at how I could pass an entire day in my yard, yet feel transported to a completely different place. That afternoon, I was an immigrant on the run, escaping to America. 2 days earlier, I'd been on the Underground Railroad in the magical realist universe of Ta-Nehisi Coates' The Water Dancer, my current book club selection. If you haven't read it, you must. It is engrossing, poetic, provocative, heartbreaking. It will take your breath away. In another book I read recently, one of the characters owned a bookstore, and the sign out front said, 'Books, cheaper than airline tickets.' How true that is. For the price of a book, you get to explore the world, be intrigued by new people, be fascinated by new ideas, be dazzled, held in suspense, thrilled. Book lovers everywhere know the feeling that takes over when you're all the way in and can't wait to turn the page or have to brace yourself before turning it. You just want to tell somebody. You want to share the experience. And wouldn't it be amazing if you could speak with the author and learn what was in their mind? All of this is why I've joined forces with Apple to create what I hope will be the world's most vibrant book club, engaging readers everywhere in conversations with one another and with the authors who conjure the magic. Apple is in a billion pockets, y'all. To me, that presents a magnificent opportunity to connect the world through reading. With each announcement of a new book club selection, you'll have a chance to buy the book, read it, and then take part in a conversation with the author about the story and the writing process. Authors are my rock stars. Long before I started the original Oprah's Book Club on the Oprah Winfrey Show in 1996, I would reach out to the author after I finished a good read. I remember calling Wally Lamb after reading and loving She's Come Undone. He said, "Wait a minute, let me put down the laundry basket." I was taken aback. Authors did their own laundry? I've since come to know quite a few, and yes, they are just like us, but with that rarefied ability to turn words into images and stories that, in the best cases, will resonate through the ages. My partnership with Apple gives me a chance to take one of my most joyful experiences and spread the word. I know for sure you'll appreciate the community that results when people engage with stories that enhance their lives. For me, the only thing more thrilling than being captivated by a brilliant book is being able to share it. Thus, our goal of building the most stimulating book club on the planet. You can follow the club on Instagram at Oprah's Book Club, and Apple TV Plus will stream conversations with the author and me across all devices, uniting people through the power of stories that remind us, no matter where we are or where we're from, that every woman, man, and child looks up in awe at the same sky. We want to convene a true meeting of the minds. Come read with us. Oprah. And now we're going to head back a year to December 2018 and the Feeling Good section of the magazine. And this article is entitled, "Who Do You Think We Are?" And there are great graphics here of DNA, you know, the double helixes, and there are people climbing their helixes. And we look at little symbols that show people's health and origin. At-home genetic testing can help you understand your biology, but before delving into your DNA, consider the caveats. Ever since the first draft of the human genome was sequenced in 2001, we've heard that examining our DNA data would reveal what makes us tick and what might someday make us sick. Less than 20 years later, for the price of a nice handbag, we're able to use a genetic testing kit to learn more about our past, present, and future than we ever dreamed possible, all from the privacy of home. In 2017, an average of 14 genetic tests were launched daily, according to the technology company Concert Genetics. A recent MIT Technology Review analysis revealed that the number of people who purchased kits more than doubled that year and now exceeds 12 million. That's a lot of people with access to a lot of data. Quote, "More raw personal biological information than ever before," end of quote, says Jeffrey Kahn, Ph.D., director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics, and he goes on to say, quote, "Some of that info can be reassuring, some can be overwhelming, and some is simply interesting. The challenge is knowing how to let it affect you," end of quote. If you're interested in becoming better acquainted with yourself, check out this cheat sheet on what you can and can't get from your DNA kit. You can discover where in the world you're from. For less than $100 and a vial of your saliva or a swab of your cheek, companies like Ancestry DNA, 23andMe, and MyHeritage DNA will reveal your ancestral origins. They do this by comparing your DNA to groups that represent regional populations from several hundred years ago, before modern migration, plus more current country populations. In the past, the results matched lineage to vast continental swaths. But over the last 2 years, as companies' databases have expanded and previously underrepresented groups have been included, the tests have been increasingly able to offer more specific geographic information. For example, 23andMe used to tell customers they simply had, say, sub-Saharan African ancestry. Now, it can sometimes reveal if they're Sudanese or Nigerian. And Ancestry DNA may be able to tell those from Irish roots whether they're from County Kerry or County Cork. You can't determine your clan, class, or tribe. Quote, we aren't able to satisfy the curiosity of Scandinavians who wonder whether they're related to Vikings, end of quote, says Scott Hadley, a 23andMe spokesperson. And while the tests may tell you that you're part Native American, they can't link you to a specific tribe, few of which have shared their DNA for research purposes. You can find out whether you have certain mutations that increase your risk of cancer. Last spring, 23andMe made headlines after winning FDA approval to expand its $199 consumer test to detect certain mutations in the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes that increase the risk of breast, ovarian, and prostate cancer. This test, which can be taken without a doctor's authorization, identifies the three most common mutations in people of European Jewish descent, says Lisa Madlinsky, director of the Family Cancer Genetics Program at UC San Diego Health. Color Genomics offers a $99 test that looks at 30 genes associated with 8 hereditary cancers. The test must be ordered by a physician, but the company can connect you with one for free. Quote, while everyone has some risk of getting cancer, these tests identify people who have a much higher than average risk who might benefit from more frequent screenings that start at a younger age, end of quote, says Madlinsky. You can't calculate your odds of getting cancer. Even with a BRCA mutation, your individual risk of getting breast cancer varies according to the kind of mutation you have, your age, and your family and medical history. A positive result still needs to be confirmed in a medical lab, and a negative result doesn't mean you're in the clear. There are thousands of BRCA mutations not identified by these tests. People with a family history of breast cancer should talk with their doctor about more comprehensive testing in consultation with a genetic counselor. You can stumble across family members you never knew you had. You may have idly fantasized about having a secret sibling, but you've probably never considered the emotional repercussions of discovering a real-life surprise sister or parent. Yet when genetic testing companies compare clients' info, they may turn to relatives who share the same DNA. The result is a brave new world of paternity scandals, mamma mia, and pregnancies that were supposed to remain hush-hush. In fact, the private Facebook group DNA NPE Friends, NPE stands for Not Parent Expected, now has more than 3,000 members, many of them shocked genetic test users. While the news is sometimes welcome, Timothy Caulfield, research director of the University of Alberta's Health Law Institute, advises would-be testers to think about how they'd react to finding out the dad isn't their biological father or that they have a mystery big brother. You can't likely connect with relatives past your fifth cousins. On average, you share 0.05% of your DNA with your fifth cousins, with whom you also share great-great-great-great grandparents. So even if you're sure you're somehow related to Rihanna or Tina Fey, family rumor, it's hard to correctly identify very distant relatives and prove it. You can help assess your risk for certain cardiovascular conditions. Geneticists have identified hundreds of DNA markers that influence your risk for developing heart disease, and now there are panels that test for several of these key genes at once. The medical testing lab Invitae offers a doctor-ordered $250 cardiovascular test that can detect DNA mutations associated with cardiomyopathy, a condition that weakens heart muscles and can lead to heart failure. Quote, if you know you have it, then you could try to avoid heavy exercise and get frequent checkups, end of quote, says Robert Nussbaum, MD, Invitae's chief medical officer. The panel also detects genes for arrhythmias, which can cause fatal abnormal heartbeats and conditions that rupture blood vessels. One of the most significant advances is increased testing for familial hypercholesterolemia, FH, which can involve dangerously high levels of bad LDL cholesterol from a young age. Quote, an estimated 90% of people are unaware they have this, end of quote, says Daniel Rader, MD, who specializes in cardiovascular genetics at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine. Yet people with FH have up to 20 times the risk for heart disease, which can lead to heart attacks and strokes. You can't discover that you'll have a heart attack by age 50. Quote, these tests show only the probability of having a heart attack compared with the average person, end of quote, says Rader. Still, that info can inspire you to make key lifestyle changes and to consider whether cholesterol-lowering medication is right for you. You can find out if you're at increased risk for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. A number of tests now include the genetic variant APOE4, which is linked to an increased risk for Alzheimer's. People with one copy, that's 22% of the population, have three times the risk of developing the disease by 85. According to Harvard geneticist Robert C. Green, MD, the 2% of people who have two copies are 15 times more likely. As for Parkinson's, a small percentage of cases have a genetic basis. People of Ashkenazi Jewish or North African descent with a particular genetic variant have about a 25% increased risk of developing the disease. Note, 23andMe lets you decide whether you'd rather not know if you have these variants. You can't know for sure that you'll get a life-changing disease. Experts say genetic variants aren't the sole predictors of risk. The chances and timing of developing Alzheimer's or Parkinson's may be affected by other genes or lifestyle factors such as diet and exercise. At the same time, researchers continually discover new genes. So testing negative for those variants doesn't mean you're free from all risk. Learning about your genetics can be powerful, but they're only one factor in determining your fate. The rest is up to you. And now we're going to go all the way back to July of 2017 for one of my favorite Martha Beck columns. This is from the May We Help You section of the magazine, and this one is called Food of the Gods. You are what you eat, so make sure you're getting a balanced spiritual diet, Martha says. Recently, I told a frazzled client that she needs to take time each day to nourish her spirit. She said, I'm not even sure how to do that. Can you give me a balanced spiritual diet, like the old food pyramid? Well, sure, I thought, except the food pyramid never worked for me. I'm gluten intolerant and have trouble absorbing fats. Once my doctor wrote me a prescription for less quinoa, more peanut butter. No one diet plan is right for everybody, and that goes for our metaphysical needs as well. But some spiritual practices are so nourishing that they've been recommended throughout history all over the world. I've outlined a menu of these food groups here. Add one of them at a time, the way your doctor might introduce a food to see how your body reacts. If a practice nourishes you, adjust the amount to find your own minimum daily requirement. Then add another practice. Eventually, you'll create the perfect spiritual diet for you. And the first one of six is hold still. The most powerful nourishment is also the simplest. Shh. Practicing stillness is a venerable art in many spiritual traditions, usually in the form of meditation. You may want to try formally meditating by focusing on your breathing, a mantra, or a question. If you want a more Western approach, follow the biblical instruction, "Be still and know that I am God." Eckhart Tolle believes this is actually one concept, our ultimate spiritual truth expressed five ways. Be, period. Still, period. Know, period. I am, period. God, period. Contemplating any one of them provides nutrient-rich sustenance. I used to hate meditation. Dropping my mind into stillness was like dropping a cat into a washing machine. Nevertheless, I could feel the practice feeding me, and between sittings, I grew noticeably healthier and more peaceful. The second one, talk it out. You may have been raised to recite prayers before eating, sleeping, entering battle, or whatever. Myself, I'm not a formal prayer girl. My favorite invocation is silently shrieking, "Help! Help! Help! Help!" I also like to write whiny letters. I figure if there's really an omnipotent force reading them, I can just let it all hang out. Prayer means talking to your higher power in whatever way feeds your soul. Pray the rosary, or kneel by your bed, or just riff. Two friends of mine spend every morning chatting with God out loud, as if the Almighty were sitting happily at their coffee klatch. The only thing that matters is that you speak from your heart. The third one, wise up. Generally, when we pray, our higher power doesn't get right back to us, but that doesn't mean we can't find answers. Some earthlings can listen so deeply that they actually hear the divine. They receive guidance and comfort to share with the rest of us, like spiritual receptionists passing along messages. Of course, there are plenty of frauds who only claim to hear, know higher wisdom. But I've found that when someone's got a direct line to the universe, their words have such a profound resonance, you immediately recognize them as truth. I recommend consuming a wide variety of foods in this group. You'll discover amazing similarities between the words of different masters, whether they're from Tibet or the Middle East or Mexico. The lessons are simple. Indescribable peace is possible. Love is our highest purpose. We're all one. Once you taste the sweetness of true wisdom, you'll crave it every day. The fourth one, feel the beat. Music is another form of divine communication, one that transcends language. According to some scientists, the rhythm and resonance of music activate areas of the brain that help us feel we belong to something larger and are connected to each other. The effects are even stronger if we sing or hum and let our bodies follow along. What music do you feel deep down in your soul? Gregorian chants, a lone flute, the soft sounds of the 70s. Whatever form you choose, sing, dance, and sway. Let the music move you. Literally, it's a joyful way to absorb spiritual nutrients. And the fifth one, come together. We all need solitude, but we also need times of connection when we can talk to one another, help one another, and love one another. This doesn't require moving to an ashram or even going to church. You simply need to connect with another human being who shares your spiritual point of view. It could be a friend or a family member, or you might find someone in your book club, a 12-step meeting, or your African drumming class. The important thing is having a chance to feel someone else's spirit and be fed in return. Miraculously, giving and receiving are equally nutritious. And finally, number six, go natural. If there is a creator, then we can see that being's self-portrait anytime, right outside our window. It's called nature, and you can start to appreciate it right now just by looking up at the sky, or take a drive through the countryside, or a walk in the park. Contact with the natural world calms our nervous system and quiets us enough to hear our inner voice of wisdom and intuition. Trust me, it's there. To coax it out, just breathe the fresh air, open yourself to nature, and wait. When you give your body healthy food, you feel more vibrant and alive. The same is true for your spirit. Sample a few portions of everything on this buffet, and you'll instinctively find the diet that will help you thrive. What could be more delicious? And now let's jump over to Live Your Best Life. Again, this is from the archives, February 2017. And under the heading Creature Comforts, we have an article called Call of the Wild, an environmentalist's mission, record and protect. Bernie Krause has traveled from the Antarctic to Zambia to take the sounds, both quiet and cacophonous, made by creatures of our world. But his collection isn't just a sampling of penguins and zebras. It's an anthology of environments, of every creaking branch or crashing wave one might hear in the woods or on the beach. The field, which Krause helped establish, is now called Soundscape Ecology. He says, quote, studying the sound of one animal is like trying to get the beauty of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony by listening to a single violin. You need a holistic approach, end of quote. Krause's epiphany came in 1968 when he was a musician working with Warner Brothers Records. He says, quote, I just read Silent Spring by Rachel Carson and decided to make an ecologically minded album. I grabbed mics and a stereo recorder and marched into a park just north of San Francisco. When I turned my machine on, I was captivated, end of quote. After more than a decade of field work, he began creating sonic installations to help museums bring wildlife exhibits to life and developing soundscape education programs with the National Park Service. His archive grew. Today it has roughly 5,000 hours of recordings. The 78-year-old adventurer continues to learn from his echo library. Its most alarming lesson, the impact humans are having on the environment, including global warming, says Krause, quote, more than half my collection comes from habitats that no longer exist, end of quote. But he isn't giving up hope. He goes on to say, quote, there's a large group of people interested in this field, and they all describe the wild as their place of reverence. We can't lose that, end of quote. And there's a picture of him on the beach. Krause captures the sounds of St. Vincent Island off Florida's coast in 2003. And it's a very foggy day. And you can see the palm trees in the background. And it's very elaborate microphone on a tripod, and he's wearing a yellow rain slicker and has on a headset. And then below there's a spectrogram which shows the loss of birdsong from California's Sugarloaf Ridge State Park. So the images from 2004 have lots of oranges against a deep, deep purple background, and they show a song sparrow and a dark-eyed junco and the noise of a stream. Then in 2009, the image is not quite as intense. 2014, it's almost purple, and by 2015, you can hardly tell that there's any sound there at all. And on a sidebar here, Globetrotters for Good, we have two young women wearing blue surgical gloves holding something. Let's see. Spice Girls for two Army vets, an ancient aromatic knows no borders. A single teaspoon of saffron grown in Afghanistan can be worth roughly $10. And in a country where farming helps support 61% of households, harvesting the coveted spice could boost the economy if only growers could sell it at a fair price. That's where Kimberly Young left and Emily Miller to the right, former U.S. Army engineer officers, come in. 3 years ago, along with two other associates, Young and Miller, co-founded Rumi Spice to put money directly in farmers' pockets. In Herat Province, where Rumi Spice operates, people spend about $35 every month on food and housing, says Young, quote, "We paid our farmers $4,000 each for 2 kilograms of saffron the first year," end of quote. When Miller and Young were deployed in Afghanistan, Miller conducting night raids, Young searching for roadside bombs, they never laid eyes on a saffron field. Young got her first glimpse when she returned in 2014 to follow up on another veteran's tip. She says, quote, "He told me about a farmer who had tons of saffron and nowhere to sell it. I remember driving along the dusty roads, turning a corner, and whoa, royal purple flowers everywhere," end of quote. Today, Rumi Spice's original crop of 11 farmers has grown to 94, and Miller and Young see their business as a catalyst for peace and prosperity equally. Young says, quote, "For many Americans, the word Afghanistan evokes thoughts of war, but our countries can find common ground instead of conflict," end of quote. Also in Live Your Best Life, this is from March 2017, Trailblazer. Go fly with her. A passionate adventurer helps black travelers get their move on. In 2011, Zim Ugochukwa spent 2 weeks exploring India on a chartered train. The far-flung expedition gave her the travel bug that would later propel her to China, Laos, Vietnam, and Thailand. But Ugochukwa's life-changing trip was marred by one tremendous low. Quote, "On my first night in Delhi, I saw a commercial for skin lightening cream," end of quote, says the 28-year-old. Quote, "As the woman's skin got lighter, her smile got wider. It seemed to say that being as dark as I am is something to be ashamed of," end of quote. She responded to that painful moment by creating Travel Noir, travelnoir.com, to provide black globetrotters with resources and community. She says, quote, "If you skim through the travel section at Barnes & Noble, you'll find blonde women gallivanting across Iceland or Italy. But that's not me. I set out to change that narrative," end of quote. What began 3 years ago as a collection of online reviews, must-see African music festivals, the best bakeries in Paris, and tips, how to make the most of a long layover, how to travel for free, now offers small guided tours to destinations from Cuba to Zanzibar. She says, quote, "We take 14 strangers on the ride of their lives," end of quote. But Travel Noir's journeys aren't all posh affairs. She goes on to say, quote, "In Cape Town, we visit townships to talk and walk with people who live there. In Bali, we fish on local wooden boats, not yachts. It's sometimes uncomfortable, but yields insights. My time in India was transformative because of difficult experiences," end of quote. Today, Ugochukwa, whose well-worn passport has stamps from 5 continents, oversees about 60 trips a year. And thanks to Travel Noir, she's become a prominent figure in what's known as the Black Travel Movement. Ugochukwa says, quote, "It's a reaffirmation of the idea that people of color can go anywhere they want without being afraid, because the image of the international explorer includes us now, too," end of quote. Bon voyage. And there's a picture of her with her long braided hair, and she's standing against a really vibrant background, some cobalt blue louvered shutters that have been trimmed in orange. And that is her on Sicily. And let's go back to November of 2015. I really have some old things saved in the back of my notebook here. And my favorite way to end an hour of Oprah is with answers to folks to the monthly question. And so November of 2015, that is, what are you most thankful for this year? Teresa Pepins of Decatur, Georgia says, "This has been a year of many changes. I moved to Atlanta, found a new job, vacationed in Spain, and finally got my novel published. Holding the finished book in my hands brings me such unimagined pleasure." Terry Orth of Powell Butte, Oregon says, "This year, my fiance and I moved to a new state to start our life together, but a few months later, he was diagnosed with cancer. My girlfriends have gone above and beyond to support us by staying connected, checking in, giving advice, showing love, and offering shoulders to cry on, even though they're thousands of miles away. There is no way I could ever thank them enough. My love for them shoots the moon." Krista Rousen of Cape Coral, Florida says that "My daughter has turned into a strong, independent woman. She was paralyzed in a car accident when she was 10 years old. Now she's going into her senior year of college and competes in marathons across the country in her racing wheelchair. She cares about making a difference in the world, and it brings me peace, knowing that she always will." Jamie Bassett of San Diego is thankful for her personal trainer. She says, "I am a healthier, happier person because of him. And today, at 38 years old, I'm in the best shape of my life. I can't wait for what next year brings us." Peggy Martin of San Miguel, Mexico says, "My divorce, it made me become me again. Little by little, I peeled away layers of sadness and realized that I needed to love myself before someone else could. Today, I'm happy and madly in love with my best friend who sees life and family like I do." Kathy Gutch Nestor of Hazlitt, New Jersey says, "As my brother and sister celebrated their 50th birthdays this year, our family also hit a remarkable milestone. We've been a group of 13, mom, dad, and their 11 children for half a century. We all know how blessed we are to still be together, and none of us takes it for granted." Margaret Ann Fontenot of Magnolia, Texas says, "Being able to hug and kiss my husband, a 32-year veteran of the Houston Police Department, when he leaves for work 6 days a week." And with that, we've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.